Hey, Tom, you still there? KO4QLG.
Does a hog fart?
Well, I reckon it does. How you doing tonight? You miss me this week?
I did. I thought of you about 20 seconds ago, and I missed you on the net. And I was fixing to call you in the next day or so. I didn't know why he wasn't on. This is N0GR. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good. I was pulling my boots off when you just come on the radio a couple minutes ago, and I had to get my boots off before I could make it over here to the chair.
Problem, get married.
Okay. That one went over my head. How would that solve anything but give me more problems to deal with?
She's laughing over there. She's going up the stairs to call her buddy up in Kansas. She said, "You're awful." Well, I meant that if you had a wife, you could have them pull off your boots. Once in a while, Bernice has to do that, but not very often. Once in a while, I got to pull them off of her. She's got a high arch. I bought her some nice ones, and she's been saying she needed some new ones for out around the chicken pen, you know, when it's wet and that. And so I bought a real nice pair online, and she had told me not to, but I still did. But she's got a foot like Bigfoot, I guess you'd say, 10 or 11. So I found some on Amazon, you know, it's about 50 bucks, I think, and I ordered them, and by gosh, she's right, as usual. She's got a real high arch, and these things even folded down halfway on the sides, and she still couldn't get them on. I couldn't get them on her.
That Lazar had a show back a few years ago on that specific subject, mail order boots. I think it was Bo that ordered him some mail order boots, and he was limping around during the whole show.
Admit it. My problem is I gotta buy a $150 pair of tennis shoes or whatever kind of shoes every 3 months, because they overcorrected my foot and they fused it. And when I tore some tendons in it, and I went to Kansas University Medical Center and had it fixed, and the guy overcorrected it to the left. And so they wear out on the left side. So my neighbor's got more nice new tennis shoes than you can shake a stick at. Mine's real hard to find because I wear a B width. And I wear a 13 in a B, as in Baker. And you can't find cheap ones, let alone find any that narrow. So there you got the rest of the story. And just something I got to live with. It's better than pushing up daisies from the root side.
Yes, sir, I imagine it is. I normally get my boots from the surplus store. This last pair I got, I think retail was $350. And I picked them up, I think, for $45.
Now that's a bargain. Well, I'll tell you what, you get what you pay for. And if you buy high-quality stuff, I have, they had to make me an arch on my left foot, and it's got about a 3.5-inch screw from my heel up through my ankle, and then there's 4 other screws in the rest of my foot. And it hurt every single day, and since at least the year 2000, so that's about 10 years. Well, no, that's 24 years. So I have to put medicine on it every morning, every night, and sometimes during the middle of the day, but I'm not hollering. At least I'm walking, not in a wheelchair. That would be the pits. But the other foot's not too good either. But I took after my mother. She wore a number 8 quad A. In other words, 4 A's. And super narrow. My sister had very narrow feet. Bernice, her side of the family's got farmer's feet, you know. And I envy them, don't get me wrong. But even for a lady, she's got a large foot, a number 10. But it's rather wide, too. But my daughter up north, she wears a very narrow shoe, too. And, of course, anything bad gets blamed on Dad. And anything good, Mom gets credit for it. You know how that goes. It's in 0TR.
Yeah, what? I couldn't imagine screws in my foot. That sounds painful. My feet are quite the opposite. You know, I got to go extra wide on mine. I got duck feet. I always was, even if I say so myself, a pretty good swimmer, and that might be the reason why.
Swimmer, Chris. Nothing scared me about the water. I enjoyed that. But, I don't know. It's just an affliction that I've got. But you have normal feet. My dad had a D-width, as in dog. But Mama had a very narrow foot. And I'm the one that wound up with it. But, oh well, Mama was good. She was just good. That's all I can say about her. And she passed away when she was 80, and that's been quite a while ago. Well, what you been doing? Why ain't you been on? We got 4 inches of rain the last 2 days. And Patrick come over this afternoon and set a spell and jawed with us. We sent him home with some 4-year-old Wisconsin aged cheddar cheese with club crackers and some of Bernice's homemade summer sausage. Didn't want the board to starve before he got home. And then a couple of dozen eggs. They're starting to lay a little bit now, but then they went down to 2. Well, now they're back up to 5 one day and 6 the next. So we'll take some down to the kids this weekend. I ain't eaten as many lately. I've been eating cereal for breakfast with peaches and strawberries and bananas in it and stuff like that. I tell you what, I've been losing weight compared to Bernice's big breakfast. Why haven't you been on? You not been feeling well, or did you have something come up?
Brian just had meetings to go to. First part of the week was church meetings. And tonight was a GOP meeting, and every night I've been expecting to get out of there in plenty of time, and every night I've been turning on the radio when I get home, and the net's already over with till tonight. Just called that. Tail end of it, but it was kind of short that night tonight, too.
Which is really, really fast, and so you was lucky to get in, and when I didn't hear you, or Rusty, or some of the regulars, I just went ahead and secured, because I thought something had come up. I know I missed you the other night, so I had just got out of the rain locker. And I need to finish getting dressed. And I just now got down here just a little bit after 9. Here comes Bernice. Was Mary Jo not there? I bet she was in bed. She goes to bed at 8:30 or 9 o'clock up there in Kansas. Go figure.
8:30 our time or their time?
Bernice called her about 9 o'clock here. She'd been 8 o'clock there. I don't know. she likes to go out. They got a casino up there now near Pittsburgh, Kansas. And sits right down on the Missouri line, just about. And she likes to go out there. And her husband passed away a while back. And he was a good friend of mine, too. He was Air Force. But really nice guy. He worked at the rewind place that I used to take all my big motors to get rewound. And he was really, really good at it. But he worked on the B-52s in Thailand.
Well, sound like he knows and knew what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Some of those motors from the coal mines and that, Chris, and you can go into Atkinson's Armature Works, and those boys would be sitting in the stator of the motor, putting in those preform coils that they had a special machine they'd make these coils on. And I don't know how many horsepower that they were. Some of them were synchronous motors. They run in sync with the AC frequency, 60 cycles. They were humongous. And a lot of them were off of the coal shovels. Big, huge DC machines. And they'd rewind the armatures. And they'd rewind the stators. And it was really something to see. And then we made the hot houses that they'd pull around where they made their interconnections to shift from 72, they'd bring it down to 7,200 volts. Most of the coal shovels were running on 7,200. Some of them run on 4,160. And then they'd pull them around with a bulldozer, and they'd hook those cables into them, and they had a circuit breaker, so they didn't kick out the main line out on the highway, you know. And Paul worked there for a long time. But he did work in Thailand. I knew some of the boys from Upao over there in Thailand. They were Air Force guys. Occasionally they'd come over to Tamron Bay. But I took the grandson down to the World War II Memorial down there. It's an upstate thing today. And I was rather disappointed. We just went through the United States Army Museum in New Orleans, and it is just fabulous. It's an honor to go through it, and it's huge. I mean, they got B-17s and B-25s and B-51s, and even got tanks inside of there, and artillery pieces and such. And then to come up here, and there's one little bitty room. But the nicest part of it is I got to meet that young lady that gives the weather on the Fox News Channel of a morning. And she's our sweet gal. And had my grandson with me. He's interested in that kind of thing. And he's real quiet, but he likes World War II stuff. And he plays those video games with it, you know. Boy, that kid, he's smart as a whip, but he's just as quiet as Bernice. And we had a good time. Took him by the donut shop on the way home. And we went over to Food Lion, bought some pickles. And then we come up to the house and had our donuts and some coffee and picked up Bernice. Then went down and took him back home about 14 miles south. So it was a nice day.
This morning watched the D-Day anniversary on the TV this morning, and you definitely didn't miss nothing there. It was good until one certain fella got on there and started talking the country down. Up until that point, it was very good.
Boys didn't turn their back on him, but I don't think they knew enough to. Trying to bring it. down here in the basement. It's on Spectrum, and it was all of D-Day, and it was on the History Channel. Where did it go, Bernice? I lost the History Channel. Where? Okay, there we go. This D-Day, the Unheard of Tapes, Part 1, and merciful God, it's the most unbelievable thing. Cat described it very well when he talked about it. Those people over there, they're still very thankful for what those boys did. And always honored on D-Day. That's what this was about down at the Upstate Museum today. But it just didn't amount to anything. But it was nice of them to do it. I'm not criticizing them. But I wanted more from my grandson. I've seen these things. And I've been around all kinds of different camps in my lifetime. And I just expected more. But I put out the flag this morning. I took him down there. So I did my duty anyways.
Yeah, there was a lot of our boys that paid the price over there, but words can't describe what they went through. It's definitely worth it. I started to say celebrating, but that's not the right word. It's definitely worth observing.
Get it or not. You've heard of the Bataan Death March, haven't you, Chris?
I sure have.
One of the places my brother and I went to when we were stationed over there, we were stationed at Sangley Point in the Philippines, but deployed to Cameron Bay in South Vietnam. So when we were back, anytime we were together, we'd get a special services car and go someplace. So we went to this fort in the Philippines, in Manila. And there in Manila, I remember standing over a cross that reminded me very much of the Dirty Dozen. When the guys started leaving and they poured gasoline down in those grates and dropped hand grenades down there on the generals, the enemy German generals. But that cross that I was standing by, I'll never forget as long as I live. In that cemetery, in that fort in Manila, had 600 Americans and Filipinos in those tunnels below that cemetery. And that's exactly what they done. And then we left there and we went to Bataan and Corregidor in the cemetery of the South Pacific. I forget how you Google that. But it's so beautiful. It looks like the monuments on Utah Beach and the places in Europe. And I could stand there and look at these giant marble columns with everybody's name inscribed on them and crosses as far as the eye could see to the horizon. And I remember the ones that said, "No none but unto God." And so it was just, unidentifiable bodies that were under those, the unknowns. And there were 16,000 of them, Chris. Over.
Wow. There's pretty much no words for that.
N0TR, you said everything right there, Chris. There's no words for it. And the engravings in those marble stones, and there's one after another, you have to look, bend your neck back to look way up in the air at them. and we're supposed to take a tour, and we missed our bus, and this bus driver didn't speak English very well, so he couldn't tell us when we got out of the hotel, but somehow we got rerouted, and we went aboard the USS Missouri. I got to run the code key a little bit there. It wasn't live and transmitting, but it had a code practice oscillator on it with Collins equipment. That was an honor. And we went out to Pearl Harbor, and you got to go out there on a small boat and a launch. And they took us out there to it. And they warned you, everybody, to keep quiet, that this was a place of honor and all of that. And you walk down to it, and that's what reminded me of that cemetery of the South Pacific. And it had right there over the top of the USS Arizona, you were standing there, and they had that column down at the end of the walkway with everybody's name engraved in it. And there was, as I remember it, about 1,100, Chris. But then when you turned around and walked over to the guardrail, there was still oil bubbling up, even then. Arizona.
Yeah, I heard about that. Never took the trip myself, but that is one good way of remembering. Because those lives live on. In the hearts and souls of those that serve today.
About 140 kids, a little less than that. We were president of the band boosters back there in our town in the high school. And my daughter happened to be the drum major of the band. And she was a piccolo player. And we toured Washington, D.C. I think those kids growed up 10 years, Chris. We went to the Iwo Jima Monument. We went to Arlington. I'd been to Arlington 3 times and enjoyed it every time. And the Army, the old guard there, to see them do the changing of the guard. And I've known several guys that their sons served in that. It's the most impressive thing in the world. And then they took us to the oldest Marine depot in the United States. And it was established in, like, I don't know for sure, what was it, Bernie, 1775 or something like that? It was way back, Chris. And I'll never forget, as we went in, Chris, it reminded me of Marine Recruit Depot, San Diego. There was 2 or 3 or 4 guys down on their hands and knees with their toothbrush cleaning between the bricks. The good old days, huh?
Kind of like that. Yeah, that would be the good old days.
Latrine orderly, kind of like Andy Griffith. Yeah, I'll never forget that show. But we got to watch the Silent Guard of the United States Marine Corps. And there's a big, huge, beautiful mansion down at the end of the drill field. And I'm telling you, we did drilling on the grinder every day in the Navy with a 383, which was 9 pounds. And I can show you one of those someday. But at any rate, these guys had M1 Grands, and they come out there, and they put on a show like I've never seen in my life. One of them slapped that forearm so hard that it broke or come off. He was dead in the water, and I thought, oh, what do they do now? They had a procedure for going out there and replacing that guy's piece while he was standing there frozen and getting the other that would, you just wouldn't believe it. And when they slapped those rifles, it was like they always told us in boot camp, you know, they want to hear one snap. Buddy, it was. And then they had these guys standing back to back, Chris, with fixed bayonets. And at the signal, they threw those M1s end over end with their backs to each other, several feet apart. And when they caught him, you heard snap. Now, buddy, anybody's not impressed by that. There's something wrong with them.
L4QLG. Yeah, and when they practice those things, you gotta trust a person that's doing that throwing. I'm only seeing in videos, but I can only imagine.
And then out comes the marching band, the president's own, of the United States Marine Corps. And you know, I played in an orchestra for 9 years and all the way through high school also, but I played 9 years in a university. Well, after they were done, then we went inside and they had the United States Marine Corps orchestra. And all of those people are highly degreed people at all of the big universities, you know, Eastman and the School of Music and Juilliard and places like that. It was just totally awesome. You could have heard a pin drop in there. And them dang kids were the honest kids in the world. But like I said, they growed up about 10 years. I had one on the bus that started swearing in front of the ladies and the chaperones. And I went over to him. I talked to him before we went. His dad told me how ornery he was. You got my permission to do anything you need to do, Tom. And I went over there and I sat down beside him. I said, put my hand up by his ear. And I said, you listen to me. I can't remember that or whatever. Well, I know it wasn't Chad. I think it was Chad. I said, if I hear you swear once more in front of those ladies, I said, I'm going to beat you to death right here in front of them, or do my best. And I said, furthermore, your dad said anything I done was all right by him. His dad was a rough old boy. You know, he didn't do that anymore, Chris.
Put the fear of God in him. Sounds like that's what he needed.
Oatmeal cookie here while I'm talking. Well, that part it was, Chris. He's a big old boy, and I doubt like heck I could have done it. But bluff counts for something, don't it?
I guess so. In that case, anyway.
In a hotel, and there were chaperones on each floor. Well, we had this one kid. He wound up being a professor out at the university. On heavy equipment. But he was honorary as I was when I was in high school. So immediately when everybody went to bed, I went up and was on the girls' floor. Now, that was at the elevator entrance, not in the girls' room, of course. And I was standing there. And about 10 o'clock, here comes the elevator. And the elevator comes up. There he is. There's that guy that I threatened to whip. He's in there and two other guys. And they looked at old Tom, and they just reached over and hit the down button, and I never had any more trouble out of them. I didn't have to say a word.
It sounded like that boy was listening to you when you spoke to him earlier.
The business. But I think it was the best thing in the world that we could have ever done for those kids, especially when we went out to Arlington. The only thing I regret is I never did visit some of the graves that I wanted to visit. I have one that's kinfolk there now. But Audie Murphy's grave, I'd have liked to went there. But I never saw any of the old guard gentlemen out there walking freely just when they changed the guard, and you dare not say anything then. place where all of these famous people were buried. And it was amazing. Some of the movie stars in that were heroes in World War II that, you know, Mr. Rogers. I can't remember if he had the Medal of Honor or not, but he was way up there. You never heard him ever mention that.
I haven't heard of it.
He was another one.
And my cousin that sent you that info on, he's buried here in Easley.
You know the guy on Green Acres? He was a coxswain that drove the LSDs in when, I think that's what they called the small boats. There's a name for them, you know, with the front that comes down. And then on the way out, he was picking up bodies in there. And he was awarded some very high-ranking awards. But just people, you just wouldn't, you know, just normal individuals that are out there. And it's pretty amazing. And we visited Kennedy's grave, of course.
Sir, I've been to Arlington, but never walked through the graves myself. It was a pretty awesome place.
Awesome, too, back towards town there, towards the Capitol. Well, my cousin was a bird colonel, 82nd Airborne, and his son-in-law was he went into town and I think it was Fallujah to get supplies or something to bring back out to his platoon or, you know, whatever they call them in the Army. And he was standing in line and a 122-millimeter rocket come in and blowed him up. At the same time, Don's son was the commanding officer of a Black Hawk squadron. And he was north of there, and he flew down there real quick. He said, "Dad, there's only enough to bring home in a box."
And it's so very sad knowing that those guys just done that on their own. No Medal of Honor attached to them.
Wake Island, and I stepped out of that aircraft and see how hot it was there. And then years and years later, when those boys went in 1991 into Iraq, I couldn't imagine being out in that heat like that. I know it didn't last but 100 hours or whatever it was, but gee, Manny. It's a real killer, Chris.
Yes, sir, it is. I remember they issued us desert camis right around that time. Never had to wear them, but we was on a ship. We had to have them with us just in case.
Immediately issued us greens over in Vietnam, but I only have one jungle fatigue shirt left. It was the toughest things in the world. And my brother, he loved those jungle boots. I didn't because I couldn't find any to fit me. They was all one width, you know, and I wear narrow shoes. But I had them for a long time, the jungle boots. But Ronnie, my brother, he just loved those things. But the greens, I like that, those jungle fatigues. We went down and traded 6 cases of San Miguel beer to the supply chief. My brother knew him. And they were all of the ones you guys turned in from being out in the bush, you know. But they'd all been washed and dried and pressed. And I remember getting mine with, it had a major, you know, the gold oak leaves. forget. I think I might have got one with the curls, oak leaves on them. Of course, you had to take those off immediately. But you pulled them off the shelf, they're all pressed and that, and just dumped them in our hand. They didn't know anybody or have any beer. They brought down, oh, it looked like one of them Strange Brothers 12-ton trucks. And a deuce and a half or whatever. And it was loaded with those old scroungy uniforms. And they just dumped them on the tarmac out there by the runway. And you just started grabbing what you could for something that fits you. And there we had those nice, snappy, new, best uniforms.
I guess that beer was good for one thing.
Well, about 100 cases every week or two from the Philippines to the crews that were rotating back, the flight crews, and all that down to the Philippines. And the only beer they had was, I was trying to think of it. I'm not a drinker, so it didn't matter to me. I forget the brand name of that. It wasn't Busch. Oh, darn it now. It's been 50-some years ago. But that beer, they put formaldehyde in it, Chris, in the tropics to keep it from spoiling. And the connoisseurs of beer, they knew that. And they didn't want that. But that San Miguel was made right there in the Philippines. The story was that, you know, one can might be 5% and the next can might be 10 or 15. I couldn't vouch for that. I just know that's what the guys said, and that's what they wanted. And they'd trade about anything for that.
Can't say I've ever heard of that. But that would make sense, the way they do things over in the Philippines from what I hear.
I'm up and trying to buy my ration card there in the barracks for the liquor. I think you could get 5/5 a month. Well, I didn't use any of them, and it was real dirt cheap. And they'd come up and offer you a premium for that. And I just told them, no, I'm going to use those myself. Because if you got caught selling those, I think they'd hang your butt, you know?
Yeah, I imagine they would.
There's a lot of black market stuff went on over there. And they would take the liquor and premium stuff from the base. And then they'd load it in the back of a car, and they'd take it into Manila. And they'd sell it for like 3 times what they give for it. It was a profitable business. And between me and you, I saw when I was going out the gate one day, I saw a car pull up there, and I saw the guard at the gate. I won't say what service he was from. And he opened that trunk and looked straight in that trunk. And it was thoroughly loaded with whiskey. And shut it, give them a smart salute, send them on their way.
KO4 QLD. Yeah, sometimes that's the way things happen.
I saw a lot of nice things in the Philippines. We went out to an inactive volcano and, oh, I don't know where all. It's a different world, though. And downtown was just pitifully poor. It really was. So I didn't go out the base very much. A lot of the guys did. They liked to drink and that, and that's great. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I'd stay back and write letters to the wife or something. That was a wuss. Shoot. But anyways, did you spend any time overseas, Chris?
Yes, sir. Spent a year in Okinawa. And while one float. I was, my base was Camp Corning, but I was actually stationed on the ship USS Bowerwood, which is at the bottom of the ocean now. Seen pictures on the internet where they sunk it.
I remember that name, USS Bellawood. I sure do. I don't remember what for. But I remember we'd go out and do mining runs, practice mining runs, because the P-3 could lay mines. And they had these radar stations set up on these smaller islands. But I remember as we approached, I was running radar, and you could, yeah, I still hear it in my ears to this day. Kadena, 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 this is, you know, and then went on, the air traffic controllers. And we landed at Naha, Okinawa. And then you went out, and you'd fly over these little islands with those, you know, not over them, but wherever you was laying the mines, because we weren't doing nothing, and that's why I just was running radar for the heck of it. And the tactical coordinator, when he would say, "We're dropping now, now, now," and those radar stations would triangulate where we dropped that mine and let us know if we were successful and where we placed that mine off of Kadena Air Force Base there in Okinawa.
You know, on the weekends, we spent a long time, actually spent weekends on a Filipino ship contracted to the military to go out there and pick up those mines that y'all left out there.
Well, now that's from somebody else, because we didn't actually drop the mines. They simulated it by saying, "We're dropping now, now, now." And then that's when they would get the bearings from three different places and triangulate where we said we dropped that mine. But we didn't actually have them loaded up at that time, but we had that capability.
Well, I guess some guys I was friends with over there, and guess they were picking up somebody else's mines, and they'd go out for the week while we was working, and then we'd get together on the weekends, and we'd just stay on their ship rather than driving back on base or back to our ship.
And those minesweepers in San Diego, they were wooden, and that was so they wouldn't explode when they got near a mine that was magnetically detecting you. So you might have been on a minesweeper. Who knows?
Yeah, I know it was a Filipino boat. Like I say, they were contracted out. I don't remember if it was wood or not, and that's been a while for me.
That they were wooden. They looked a little different, but my brother told me, "You know, those are wood. They're minesweepers, and that's so they don't set off the mines, or hopefully they don't." And some of them were set up that way. There was a lot of different fusing, I'm sure, on them. Well, we're a lot watching them come on the beach over there now. I don't know which beach they're on, but they're coming off the LSTs. They got recordings of a German that, you know, was in the pillboxes and that. And they're actually telling the stories, and they're taping them as they do their experiences on the beach. June 6, 1944, shot by Desmond O'Neill, it says. Boy, the weather sucked, I'm telling you. Those guys come ashore at a really bad time, and they said the Navy saved their butt. They were trapped on the beach, and these captains of these ships on the destroyers and that, they weren't really the big ones necessarily. They come into the really shallow water and laid barrages up there against those pillboxes and that give them, the Army and the Marine Corps, the ability to get up those cliffs and take out those pillboxes. And they were very thankful for the Navy for that. And these guys in the Navy really risked being court-martialed, and they also risked going aground there and being stalled, and they'd have been wiped down instantly. Bull Halsey, I think, was in charge of that, Admiral Halsey. And he allowed them to go on in into the shallow water as a last resort. That's what finally got them over the hill.
I heard about that on a documentary the other day, and it was something that wasn't actually planned. They were just taking so much fire, they, like you said, last resort, jumped in and saved their tails.
Guys up there on the beach had more guts than a packing house, but they were stuck. And there wasn't nothing they could do about it, and they were close to losing the invasion, and that would have set them back 5 or 6 years, they said. And so it's wonderful that those guys, all of them, everybody, you know, chipped in and did that. And God, I wouldn't have had the guts to go over up there and climb up that wall and that like a lot of them did. I guess a lot of them just didn't expect that. You know, as bad as it was once they got there. But what are you going to do? You know, you come out the front of a boat and it's either run or die. And there's a lot of both. But the cliffs of Dover, yeah. Well, Chris, it's been fun talking to you tonight. Very enjoyable. And honors our troops that were over there. And I believe they were the greatest generation. But I also believe every man that fought for his country belongs to the greatest generation. I think it would be very hard to find that now, unfortunately. And I don't know how Biden had the guts to go over there and face those men. I really don't. That was beyond belief, but I just don't think he knows, you know. It'd be like me for president. I'm 76 years old, but I got sense enough to know I'm too old. And if there's a time to quit. They say that he's going to go to the time that they do all the delegates, drop out, turn it over to Harris, and then they're going to get rid of her, and they're going to have that, what's that guy's name from California, Breeze? Yeah, Newsom from California, take all of his delegates and run for president. And it's a sad state of affairs. That way, Biden can pardon his son when he goes to prison. And that's as much as I'll say about that. But that's what I heard in the grapevine. And God help us all if that does happen. I don't know what's going to happen. This whole dang world's gone crazy, Chris. But for the best, I hope they change administration. I don't know who it'll be, but I heard that that Kennedy guy said, you don't care if gas is $22 a gallon the other day. And I thought, no, you probably don't, being a Kennedy. You can afford that. Anyways, Chris, I'm glad you're all right, and glad to hear you tonight. And hopefully nobody's listening to our banter. And you take care, you know, my friend, and the pleasure's all mine. J042LG and 0OTR. Good night, Chris.
All right, Tom, I'll let you go. Thank you for your service, by the way. And I will tell you two quick things. One, I'm not going to tell you what that man's set the day over there in Normandy, because it'll just make me mad. But he did authorize some of those war missiles and stuff to be used inside the boundaries of Russia. Talk about escalating things. He's making a mess. But I'll let you go with that. KO4QOD, I'm clear.
I warned him, Chris, that that's an act of war. And he's already sent the weapons over there to do that now, or else they're on the way. And Europe would like us, you know, they're talking about sending troops in from France and different nations over there. And Putin's warned them, if you do that, that's an act of war. And well, that brings in NATO into it. And then if NATO comes in, that means our boys come in. That means our grandsons and sons and daughters are going to get drafted. And this man's playing with fire. I don't believe the man knows what he's doing, nor any of his Joint Chiefs of Staff, put it that way. I'm sorry to say, but you don't play with Putin. He's not that kind of guy. He was Soviet KGB, and when he tells you that, you know, that's an act, and he's moved tactical nuclear weapons up to the border, and he will use them, Chris. So I don't know where the end game is on this. It's scary, and people are just ignorant by complacency. They're not paying attention. And the news media is the biggest bunch of liars I've ever heard in my life, for the most part. So you don't know what to believe as common old citizens like you and me. But we pray that it gets over with and ends in peace. I can't see why everybody can't get along. It's crazy out there. And if you get in war with Russia, you're going to be in war with Taiwan. And Taiwan's just faunching at the bit to start a war with us over the or China. What, really? Oh. They're just launching at the bit to take Taiwan. There you go again. We're spread too thin and biting off more than we can chew again. Take care, Chris. Good night. Bernice is ready to go upstairs, she says. This is Gerald T.R. Clarence.